Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:26 p.m. and today is December 12th. And I thought that I would kick off today just looking at just the broad market. And we can see that there's a lot of green on the screen, but not really a lot of movement, except, for example, in both palladium and in platinum. Well, part of the reason for that move that we've seen in platinum and palladium is because of the strikes that were, it's not a strike, the inability, in fact, of ESCOM to provide base load, which is the basic requirement of any electricity utility. Platinum prices got right up to test $1,000 in September. Since then, we've had about a 10% pullback, and it has now begun to once again reassert demand dominance in the region of the trend mean. $1,000 has been an area of resistance for most of the last 4 years, so this looks like a bullish consolidation, but we're not really going to have confirmation of a return to demand dominance until we've seen a sustained move above $1,000. I don't believe that the electricity problem today is as acute as it was back in 2008. Platinum surged higher at that point, and not quite doubled, but certainly not far off it in the space of about 9 months. There was an acute absence of electricity, and that was driving the price higher. There was a great shortage. It wasn't particularly beneficial for the miners because they couldn't produce the metal. What we're seeing at the moment is that the platinum producers are doing really very well. They've been among the best performing of any commodities asset class over the course of this year, going from 20 to 60 on the index. That is not least because they are also producers of palladium. And a number of those platinum miners had gone bust or came extremely close to it. So they had cut production to the bone and had really been I can't remember the exact term, but producing the most economically viable and their prize assets, and just neglecting to try and invest anything in additional mining capacity. Well, what that is essentially doing is helping to support the price for the shares, but also the palladium price has been extraordinarily firm. And it continues to extend its move above the $1,800 area. There is a mild, well, I think it's an increasingly wide overextension relative to the trend mean. But when we look at the most recent of the higher reaction lows, it's not all that far away. Considering the pace of the advance, then it's becoming, I think, progressively easier to analyze from a charting perspective, because the price is most definitely accelerating, and acceleration is a trend ending. Obviously, it's going to have to sustain a move below the trend mean in order to really confirm that we've seen more than a period of consolidation. I think this is the kind of time when it is appropriate to look at a point and figure chart. Because when we look at point and figure, then we're given a rather interesting, I think, a different way of looking at it. This is really only over the last year. I think we really do need to look at more over the last 3 years to get a real perspective on just how much the price has been rising. Well, we can then see that there is this succession of higher reaction lows, and that we would at least need to see a break in that succession to question the overall upward bias. We've had a really incredible advance over the last few years, and the breakout from the most recent one of those ranges has continued to be reasserted. So this is still a steep but consistent advance, and until we see a clear inconsistency, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we look at some of the individual shares, well, Sibanye Gold, for example, is now also a major platinum producer. It was able to eke out a positive performance in here today. It's almost unwound two-thirds of the decline from the peak in 2016. Over that time frame, they have acquired a significant number of additional assets at bargain basement prices, the most recent being the acquisition of Lonmin for a song. And that is also helping to support the share price. But electricity was cut off to some of their mines in here today, and it was only brought back online around 4 p.m. That does represent a risk to the ability of the miners to keep up with any kind of price advance that's driven by the absence of electricity. If we stick with some of the interesting chart patterns, I think Bitcoin right now is at a particularly interesting period. It has encountered resistance at $1,000 increments, each below the last, for the last 6 months. But that consistency characteristic changed in November. If the pattern had remained true, it would have encountered resistance at 9,000. Instead, it encountered resistance at 8,000 and the region of the trend mean. This is still a downtrend, but the pace of the decline has picked up over the last 6 weeks, and it is now testing the lower side of this little congestion area that has lasted for the last 2 weeks. It needs to bounce tomorrow. If it fails to bounce and breaks below this 7200 area, then that is suggesting there's going to be an additional break on the downside, with the potential for 7,000 to become the next area of potential resistance. So it is at, I think, a rather critical juncture at present. Then when we look at copper prices, well, copper has been ranging now for most of the last 6 or 7 months, but it has broken above the trend mean, and in the process it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And I think this does hold out the prospect of a run back up towards the high for the year around $3. When we think about what is it that could be driving that interest, well, China is opining in here today that the Trump administration is not going to impose additional tariffs on the country on the 15th. The continuous commodity index was up by almost 1% in here today, but the more important point is that it is firming from the 400 point level, and that does suggest a return to demand dominance. That is, I think, a positive vote for China. It's also a vote that we may be more into a reflation trade, considering the fact that the Federal Reserve has printed $300 billion. The Bank of Japan has been engaged in quantitative easing and is now engaging in a fiscal stimulus in excess of $100 billion. The UK is in the throes of an election, but regardless of who wins, we can anticipate there is going to be a fiscal stimulus. The ECB is engaged in quantitative easing. It might only be for 20 billion euros a month, but they are certainly expanding their balance sheet rather than contracting it. And the number of countries internationally that are involved in some form of easing or fiscal easing is growing almost by the day. Well, that's an enormous quantity of additional liquidity that is hitting the markets. It should contribute to some additional interest in cyclical shares. When we look at the Baltic Dry Index, it continues to hold the region of the trend mean. Well, then let's take a look at, for example, some of the stock markets that should benefit if we are moving back into a reflationary environment. The Vietnamese index failed to sustain the move above 1,000 about 3 weeks ago. It had an upside key reversal last week. It hasn't quite been able to follow through on the upside in here this week, but at least it was off its lows in here today. If it can sustain a move back above 980, well, then that will suggest that demand is coming back to dominance in here, and there will be, I think, a more credible outlook for higher to lateral ranging. The SET index, on the other hand, has been deteriorating, and it has so far sustained the break below 1600. So those are two of the more of the weaker markets that we've had over the course of the last 3 weeks. whereas the Indonesian market has bounced from the 6,000 point level. There's still a sequence of lower rally highs over the last year, but this looks like a broad consolidation over the last 2 years. A move back above the trend mean would confirm a return to demand dominance, in my view. The Brazilian market was among the better performers in here today. It's still right in the region of its peak, and the actions so far to try and support the currency have been reasonably effective. But this still does look like a bullish environment for the dollar, and it probably requires a bit more enthusiasm by the central bank in Brazil to support the currency than we've already seen to really stamp out speculation that we're not going to see additional weakness. The South African rand, in response to the Eskom debacle, was a little weaker in here today. It is right in the region of the trend mean. It wasn't all the way on the low by the close, and there is certainly this succession of lower rally highs by the dollar over the course of the last 4 months. When we think about whether we're going to see the region of the trend mean and the 14.5 level hold, or whether this succession of lower rally highs is going to persist, we can certainly see that the trading in the rand has compressed really quite considerably. That does suggest that we are not so far away from a meaningful breakout. And the Indian rupee continues to strengthen in here. This, I think, is rather important. What we've seen from the Indian administration over the course of just the last month have been very substantial actions to support growth. This is incredibly important from the perspective of a medium-term investor, because these kinds of reforms that India is pushing through, they don't bear fruit immediately, but it is going to greatly enhance the competitiveness of the economy over the medium term. Certainly there has been a slowdown in growth, and we're seeing some consolidation underway right now in the Nifty index. But it's coming from an overbought condition, so that's perhaps not so surprising. What's, I think, rather important is that the banking sector had pushed on to a new high. It was also quite overextended in the short term, and there is some evidence here of some consolidation underway. But as long as the banking index is holding the region of the trend mean, then that has been a reliable lead indicator for the wider Indian market for years now, and that I think is likely to remain the case. When we think about Japan, the second section index had that rollicking big upward dynamic coming through last week. It's held on to the majority of the advance in here today. Well, I think this is one of the more important points. The second section index has been a reliable indicator for years. The fact that it is now back in form is supportive of strength in the Nikkei. Of course, I think a lot of people will be continuing to keep an eye on the yen, and it has been rather steady here in the region of the trend mean over the course of the last couple of weeks. There has been a clear downward bias for the dollar over the course of the last 3 years, but yet the 115 area has continued to hold. Now the big question is, how long is this condition going to last for? This compression in trading, very similar, although perhaps not as pronounced, to what we saw in the South African rand. These kinds of compressions in trading generally lead to explosive breakouts. We're not quite yet at that point, but it does look increasingly likely. Then I think the other point is, we've had also some compression in trading for oil prices, and Brent crude is right in the region of $65. This is also the region of the trend mean, and $65 has been an area of resistance for a good portion of the year. If oil prices can firm from here, then that will certainly be positive for the energy sector. On the other hand, it's probably not going to be great news for the airline sector or the automotive sector. It would also be supportive of higher prices for the industrial resources sector, because it would inhibit the ability of marginal mines to continue to produce. There is obviously a major energy component in the production of all metals. So what happens next with the oil price is, I think, rather interesting, and we're at a rather critical juncture, because if it can sustain a move above $65, that does hold out the prospect that we will see a run back up towards 80. At $80, a lot of additional supply becomes economic. And anticipating a move very much beyond 80 would really require, I think, geopolitical tensions to flare once more. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the government bond markets, there is still a perception. I was on a conference call this morning with one of the investment committees I sit on, and there was some of the people there who sit on different investment committees were mentioning that that people are still talking about $17 trillion in negative yielding debt, but that total is now more like 11 trillion. There has been a substantial pullback in global bond prices everywhere, but perhaps most particularly in Japan and Europe. US 10-year treasuries are up around the 1.8% level. There has been a sequence of higher reaction lows off the retest of the 1.5% area. This is unwinding the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. If we see a sustained move above the trend mean, then I think that is going to confirm a clear change of trend. And I think we already have evidence of a change of trend. The size of the upward dynamics we've seen on this yield chart really do stand out. That holds out the prospect that we are going to see yields pushing higher from here. And there is the scope that we may be all the way back at 3% by the time December rolls around in 2020. There is the potential that the Federal Reserve is at the end of its cutting cycle. We're starting to see inflationary pressures rising, whether that is in wages or the capacity constraints that result from full employment, whether it is because of commodity prices starting to do better, industrial resources doing better, oil prices on the cusp potentially of pushing a little higher from here. Then, of course, there are the other inflationary points that are generally completely ignored in statistics. I know that I am looking at renewing my health insurance for 2020. I'm going to have to do that within the next 5 days. And the health insurer that I've been using for the last 2 years is no is dropping the is dropping UCLA, which is only a half a mile from my home. So there is no way that we're going to consider driving 45 minutes to the next nearest hotel, or excuse me, hospital. And that's, I think, something that is really quite burdensome in terms of trying to find another health insurer. But perhaps more important is that all of the other alternatives are approximately 20% more expensive. So that is a factor that consumers are going to encounter and are have been encountering. When people start to talk about why aren't cons isn't consumer spending picking up more, well, I think that has to be one of the reasons that consumers are flush with cash. Consumers haven't had taken on the same quantity of debt. The fact that a lot of people have got significant equity built up in the value of their homes that they're not tapping with debt is something of a mystery to some economists, but it's because of the uncertainty in the other areas of their life. That has to be one of the reasons behind it. But what it also suggests is that there are inflationary pressures rising. The other point, of course, is that the additional tariffs that have been put on exports or imports into the USA are going to eventually contribute to price appreciation, and there is just no way of getting around that fact. Whether it is how long it's delayed for, there is no way that companies are going to tolerate continued margin compression. So I think that there is at least a budding argument for yields to continue to push higher from here. Now, when we look at the gold price, it is still holding this $1,450 area. It has unwound most of its overextension relative to the trend mean, but perhaps not quite all of it just yet. Silver prices, on the other hand, have unwound the overextension relative to the trend mean, particularly following the weakness we had earlier in this week. It was in mildly positive territory in here today, in much the same way that platinum has been consolidating below $1,000. Silver is considerably more volatile, but it has been consolidating below $20. There is a clear downward bias to trading. There is still the succession of lower rally highs, but the price hasn't really gone anywhere in most of the last 2 months. It bounced from $17. We're just below $17 right now, and most of the overextension relative to the trend mean has been unwound. What that suggests to me is there is scope here that what we're seeing is consolidation. Then I think when we look at the bigger picture, the massive liquidity-fueled environment that is gathering globally is a condition that is likely to lead to asset price inflation. We are, however, starting to see that money is coming out of the private equity sector, and that there is some de-risking going on there. The underperformance of the consumer discretionary sector does suggest that there is some money getting taken off the table. The fact that Amazon has failed so far to sustain a move above its trend mean and is just about holding on to a mild succession of higher reaction lows since October. This is not a bullish pattern overall. It really does need to bounce and bounce emphatically here. Meanwhile, there are obviously some clear winners, and the acceleration that we're seeing in Apple is nothing short of spectacular. Going from 150 to 270 this year is a truly impressive performance for the world's largest company. Microsoft is another company that has been doing spectacularly well and continues to hold the breakout from the range that formed in the middle of this year. So we can clearly see that there are some very well-defined winners and losers. Even among the shares that did really very well when bond yields were compressing so rapidly, Visa is still right in the region of its peaks. American Tower, on the other hand, has been pulling back. These are both dividend growth companies rather than dividend yield companies, because the advance in their prices compresses yields rapidly. American Tower, however, has been among the go-to assets for investors for the longest time. Now the question is whether it is going to hold its trend mean, particularly following the acceleration that we saw in 2019. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.